Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're happy to have as our guest, Norm Feldheim. Norm was most recently the Chief Information Officer at Illumina. And prior to that, he served as the CIO at Qualcomm for 17 years. And he currently serves as an advisor, board member, and investor in technology startups. He's got some great lessons that he's learned in his career, and we're looking forward to today's conversation with Norm. It's great to have Norm joining us from sunny San Diego today, and appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess first off, can you give us just a little bit of an overview of your career and just a little bit of your story?
Sure. I feel very fortunate. I was lucky enough to join a small startup early in my career called Qualcomm, which was about 100 people at the time when I joined. Mm-hmm. And stayed at Qualcomm for 28 years, rode it up and down and all the different business models that they went through, learned a tremendous amount, and ultimately became the CIO in 1999 and spent 17 years there as the CIO. Did other functions as well, but it was really the CIO job that I loved while I was there and leading IT. I left in 2015, joined another San Diego company, this time in biotech, called Illumina. And Illumina is not actually a lighting company. It's the leader in genetic sequencing, DNA sequencing, and joined them and ran facilities in addition to IT. So I've always had these additional roles. Sure. I guess they call it the CIO plus job. And I was there for just over 4 years and led IT and revamped their IT organization, facilities organizations, and then redid their digital infrastructure. Since then, I've been staying out of the public, avoiding COVID, but jumping back into advisory board and board work and working with some of the Bay Area VC companies that I've had some relationships with.
Yeah.
So a lot of fun.
And to have a 28-year span with a company, that's definitely unusual for
it's
anybody.
It's certainly
these
not
days,
something so. I would recommend. It actually hurt me a bit when I did make the decision to leave. You never know what's going to happen. I would probably just retire from Qualcomm, and didn't work out that way. And I made the decision to leave. And I wasn't really prepared. I didn't even have a LinkedIn profile. You know, my resume was not up to date. I thought I would kind of whiz through interviews, and it actually was a little more nerve-wracking than that. And it took me a little bit to get my stride back and get into it. About a 10-month process, actually, from when I made the decision to leave to when I landed the job at Illumina. But I learned a lot and won't ever do that again. And now I recommend not staying too long in one place, because it does hurt you with companies and recruiters when you do decide to go.
Yeah, you probably had fallen off the radar of a lot of recruiters thinking that you were there for your full career. So
yeah,
I would say in the business that we're in, that if you haven't moved in 10 years, you probably maybe have fallen off people's lists. And that's an interesting perspective.
They just didn't believe I was ready to leave San Diego. They didn't believe
absolutely.
I was ready to leave Qualcomm. So I had to convince people that no, I was serious about it and was ready to leave. Most of the interviews I had were actually out of California, and none of them were in tech. So I did, I stayed in San Diego, which was nice, but I did, ultimately leave tech and go into biotech. So that was a nice transition for me.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely want to get your thoughts kind of around career and managing your career a little bit more. But I ask this question to most every guest. If you're able to spin back time and talk to a 22-year-old Norm, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give him?
A lot of it was, I took things almost too seriously. I mean, maybe it did help me, but, I took on a lot of stress and a lot of pressure and ended up, fighting with people and, at times I was argumentative, I kind of had to win. And that probably didn't help me early in my career. In fact, I know it didn't. Letting go, and realizing that, some of these things really don't matter. And I started taking much longer view, both from a perspective of, how I approach the job, but also personally, today, getting wound up today is, really not a great idea. I can remember 3 o'clock in the morning having email wars with the head of engineering at Qualcomm and just back and forth. And, and I'd wake up the next day and, I'd realize I'd gotten, 3 hours of sleep. That was not healthy. It ultimately didn't help my career, doing that, and had to finally, stop. Okay. Don't let him egg you on, and let go of things. Mm-hmm.
So as you think about just kind of with your career and being a CIO is different today. It's definitely a lot more strategic, business focused, and I think probably when you first started in the CIO role, it looked probably a little bit different than it does today. Is that correct?
Absolutely. When I first took on the CIO role, it was basically just take care of things, make sure nothing breaks. After a while, what I realized is what that really meant was I was expected to be ready when the business was ready. For example, Qualcomm at that point didn't have a security function. That security was just kind of the responsibility of IT, and we didn't have dedicated security folks. Everybody was responsible for security, which meant nobody was. And I had to say, all right, we need a dedicated security function. We need to create a CISO. We need to create a security team. And it was on me to figure that out and make that investment. Nobody was going to tell me that I needed to do that, or IT needed to do that, or Qualcomm needed to do that. I love the quote, and I didn't really appreciate it at the time, but the quote from Wayne Gretzky, you got to skate to where the puck is going to be. What I determined was I needed to know where IT needed to be and the kinds of capabilities IT needed to have so that when the business was ready, IT was ready. If I waited until the business came and say, hey, we need this capability, well, then it was going to be, a year, 6 months, a year, 18 months before we had this opportunity to put those capabilities in. That would mean IT was always going to be behind. Mm-hmm. And I never wanted IT to be the reason that Qualcomm couldn't grow, couldn't make its numbers, couldn't do what it wanted to do. And at least, as far as I know, and everything I got was, IT was never the reason that Qualcomm couldn't do what it wanted to do. And in fact, Qualcomm, had a really terrific growth trajectory for many, many years. And I feel like IT helped support that. But it was that anticipation, that thinking ahead, thinking long term, and anticipating what the needs were going to be that I hope made the difference and felt like made the difference there.
So if you were able to go back to that first team that you had had the opportunity to lead, what do you wish you would have known before you got that responsibility?
There's a fine line between loyalty and supporting your employees and then also recognizing that sometimes they can't grow fast enough, you know, in the, if the role was growing. Mm-hmm. Qualcomm was growing, you know, very, very fast, 25-30% a year. So that meant that the roles of IT and the leadership in IT was also, those demands on us were also growing. And there were times when those demands outgrew the ability for people to grow that fast personally. And that led to some very difficult conversations that I had to have with people that I'd worked with for a long, long time, that I'd hired, you know, personally, you know, I built the team myself, and say, what, well, you know, you're really not able to do the job. And then sometimes I waited too long, you know, to have those conversations. I didn't make other opportunities for some of those folks the way I would have or should have. You know, so those were things I look back on and say, wow, I wish I could have done more in those situations to have made that easier for everybody. But at the same time, you know, there were times when I waited too long on behalf of the business. You know, I left somebody in a role too long, and then, you know, we didn't get the job done the way I would have liked to have gotten it done. You know, so there's two sides to that problem. What I ended up with is, if I'm fair and objective and not and trying to make the right decision on behalf of everybody, you know, the person and team sometimes involved, as well as the business, that's the best I can do. And not let my personal, any sort of personal biases come in, not let other people unduly influence me, but, you know, make the logical and fair decisions and treat people right, even if it's a tough decision. If you treat people right, it usually works out all right.
So you moved from that first team to when you kind of finished up at Qualcomm. Tell a little bit about that expansion of the team and just some of the leadership models that you probably went through during that time leading, you know, that first team to kind of the overall organization, the IT function, as well as, you know, the things that you're doing.
Sure. You know, so when I, Qualcomm in 99 divested half of the company. So we went from 12,000 employees to about 5,000 people in just a few months as they sold off divisions and refocused. And we went from being a manufacturing company to a semiconductor company and a IP licensing company overnight. At that point in time, you know, they named me CIO right when that was taking place. And I now had to take a 45-person IT organization that was supporting 5,000 people and figure out how to change all the systems and learn how to support a semiconductor company. We ultimately ended up creating an organization of about 3,000 people, you know, at its heights, and the company went from 5,000 people to almost 30,000 people, about $30 billion. There are definitely some mistakes in there for me. Fortunately, I had a boss that let me learn by making some mistakes. Over time, most of the leadership team changed, you know, and I brought in, you know, new people. Other people grew from internally and took on that. I recruited from other parts of the organization. One of the best leaders in my organization was actually someone I pulled out of finance. And he had a technical bent and liked IT and liked technology. And he turned him into a terrific, or he helped, you know, he was already halfway there, and he brought him into IT and became one of, you know, my top lieutenants. So I had to be good about upgrading my skills, and my personal my skills, as well as upgrading my team, helping them develop their skills. I had one leader that remained with me during that entire, you know, 17-year career as CIO there. But most of the other leaders that started with me early on, some of them went on to other opportunities. Some of them left the company. just left. And then I recruited new people and grew other people within the organization. So I guess my learning there was you can't always predict what's going to happen. You think, oh yeah, this person's going to be great in the long run. And then boom, all of a sudden they top out. Or this person, I don't think this person's going to be, very good. And ultimately they end up being one of the best people that you have in your organization. So going with your gut and just saying, oh, well, I already know what the answer is, doesn't always work. And I had to learn to not just prejudge or go too much on my initial impressions, but actually let things play out, because there were times I was surprised.
So talk a little bit about that change of industry. So you were in one industry, you made the shift to a different industry. What were some learnings that you had during that time and just to get up to speed and figure out?
That was an interesting situation or experience. I was coming from a very large IT organization. I was taking over a much smaller one. 2000, Qualcomm was 2,000 full-time employees, almost 1,000, consultants running around. When I went to Lumen, it was about 200 IT folks and a small army, like 400 consultants running around. So I thought, all right, this is going to be really easy, no problem. And I did the first 100 days, that's what you're supposed to do. You put your 100-day plan together. And after 100 days, I went to my boss and said, all right, I think I know what to do. I'm very confident I know what to do. Here's what we need here are the changes we need to make. And all hell broke loose. People were like, I don't know. This is so fast. And what I didn't realize was that Illumina had a very deliberate kind of consensus-driven decision-making style. And 100 days was actually too fast for them. And I needed to then spend the next 100 days or so kind of getting everybody up to speed on the changes, getting more people involved with the decision. We end up executing the plan that I had originally come up with, but I had to spend a lot more time selling that plan and getting everybody on board with it than I anticipated. And what I realized was that at Qualcomm, I was very free to make the decisions and move forward, partly because I'd been there forever. Right. But partly that was the way they operated. And they, particularly for IT, they just said, go do what you need to do. Illumina wanted to be much more involved. I was brand new, so that I didn't have that trust factor built up. And I couldn't go in and change Illumina's culture. I had to adapt to Illumina. I had to change myself and change my style to fit with Illumina. And ultimately, the changes I made worked out well, and people came back and said, oh, that was really great. We love to see the way IT is turning out. But it was that learning, feeling, I guess, overly confident, that, I did know what to do. I knew the right answer because I'd been there, done that. But I just couldn't come in there and just execute that same way in a new company. I had to figure out the new company first, and then I could figure out how to execute within that.
Great advice. So thinking back, kind of as trying to stay on, especially in the technology world, things are constantly innovating. There's new things on the horizon. How did you stay on top of that? Stay innovative as far as in your role and not just, I don't think you can stay stagnant in the type of role that you've been in, but talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. And in fact, early on in my career, I was a little too inwardly focused. Qualcomm was a relatively big company in a big fish, small pond in San Diego. It was the only semiconductor company in San Diego, at the time. So there wasn't a lot of there weren't a lot of peers that I could go out to within San Diego. So I just focused inward. That turned out to be a mistake. I didn't really develop a network and didn't have anybody I could draw from, you know, in terms of ideas and advice. So later in my career, I started developing my network, but more out of the Bay Area, because there were other companies that were looked a little more like Qualcomm. You know, they were growing, you know, they were tech. So I started to develop that. And then I always felt like, you know, we needed that new idea thinking coming in. And that was hard. So I ended up trying to create ways for new ideas to come into the organization. And some of it was recruiting and bringing in people from the outside. But a lot of it was forced. So I developed relationships with a lot of the VCs up in the Bay Area. And we would go and have what we called portfolio days. You know, and this was pretty early on. You know, I didn't know too many other people that were doing it at the time. But we would go up and I would drag my whole team up there. And we'd spend the day and a half visiting the VCs and going through, we called it speed dating, you know, the 20 minutes with sure. You know, one company. And it was great to get introduced to those new companies. But what the most valuable part was the dialogue it created amongst my team. And, you know, hey, yeah, this could work. Or how do we do this? And, you know, the security guy talking about, hey, well, this would really help me out. And the infrastructure guy listening to that and saying, well, here's the problems that would create for me trying to manage infrastructure if you overlay that security, you know, system on top of the network or on top of a device. And it sparked all kinds of conversations that we otherwise never would have had. And that kind of thing happens a lot more these days. Evotech is a company that, you know, for their customers, they arrange those kinds of things, and they'll bring in, you know, portfolio companies and VCs to help do that. I can't stress how important that is for CIOs to develop those outside connections, you know, to other CIOs and IT leaders, not just the CIO, but all the, you know, the IT leaders and just IT folks in general, to have those outside connections, understand what's going on in the world of tech, and be able to get those new ideas and open their minds to new ways of thinking, to new ways of doing things. Because if you just stay doing what you're doing, the world's going to pass you by very quickly, both personally as well as, you know, the job that you're doing.
So how do you stay in touch with the trends, and what are you excited about as you look at kind of the landscape of technology today?
So I'm still engaged with VCs and in fact increasing those. And I'm actually now an investor. So I've put some money into some of these VCs, you know, not huge amounts, but certainly enough that I'm now in it.
Sure.
I've maintained some of those CIO relationships and actually building on those relationships with the CIOs that I got to know. I was part of a CIO group when I was a CIO, and I'm still, you know, I attend those meetings, and I'm fortunate enough that they let me still attend. You know, I'm kind of grandfathered in, so I hear what, you know, other CIOs are dealing with and some of the problems. And then I'm on some advisory boards for a couple of companies. You know, and I'm focused more on startups because, you know, they're a lot more interesting. So. And I still read, you know, a lot, and I do stuff like this, you know, where I'm listening, you know, and talking to other folks, you know, and they ask thought-provoking questions, you know, and it makes me think. So I usually have something happening every day where I'm engaged in some fashion, and every one of them is a learning opportunity, it feels like. But it had to be a conscious effort. When I first left Illumina last March, the first 4 or 5 months, I didn't really do much of anything. you know, part of that was COVID. You know, I was just kind of waiting for COVID to settle down. But after a little while, I realized, okay, that COVID is going to be around for a while. So I better start doing something and getting, you know, re-engaged. And I started, you know, reaching out to some of my old contacts and making those happen. That is, you doing that is work. You have to set aside some time, whether you're working or not, you have to set aside time and make those connections happen and maintain them. LinkedIn is still a terrific tool, but you know, Zoom and the phone are just as valuable, and making sure that you have those connections and then have the discussions about what people are up to and learning new things. And it helps. It does really make a difference.
So if you were to recommend a couple books to a leader, what's on your top of your book list?
I tend to follow authors, mm-hmm. you know, not necessarily books. My two favorite authors, I think, are Peter High. He's written a number of books on IT. He does blog. He has a blog. He does events. You know, he'll be the moderator at events, and he's terrific. And he pulls together CIO groups at times. And I've been fortunate enough to be invited to some of those. Jeffrey Moore is also a terrific author. I've enjoyed him quite a bit. Getting a little bit away from the traditional, couple of books that I read last year, a little over that now. One was called Quiet, and it was about the introvert and how society doesn't know how to deal with introverts and how most people don't, you know, and they get kind of pushed aside and don't get recognized for all their contributions because they don't speak up. And you know, how many times have we, you know, talked about employees, oh, you need to speak up in meetings, you know? And I can actually remember, you know, in a review, not one that I was doing, but you know, oh, this person is great, we're, you know, we'd love to promote her, but she doesn't say anything in meetings. And I thought, how sad, you know, here's this person who's got all these amazing contributions, but you're going to hold her back from a promotion because she doesn't speak up in meetings enough. And maybe that's on us as a management team. And that's, you know, what that book was about. The other one was, make sure I get it right, The Amazing Science of Meetings. And it was just about how to do a meeting, you know, and how meetings actually happen. Both of those are available on Amazon, but understanding how meetings actually work and how conflict is actually a healthy part of a meeting, and avoiding conflict actually can make the meeting boring, you know. And you know, the guy also spoke at this event before I read it, and he talked about, you know, what are the things that are interesting in about a movie? It's the conflict.
Right.
Think about the meetings you remember. Do you remember some sort of status meeting where nothing happened? No, you don't remember that meeting. It all just blurs together. You remember the meetings where there was conflict and you actually resolved something and solved a problem. And that usually meant some sort of conflict or you know, some sort of, you know, pointed dialogue at least taking place. And he, you know, wrote a very good book around that concept and how to conduct meetings very well. That was an excellent book and actually changed the way I thought about and approached meetings.
Yeah, those are a couple that I haven't heard about previous. So that's great always to have some new books show up. So outside of work, this is kind of a silly question now, just because everybody's stuck at home. But in normal times outside of work, what do you do to recharge?
Well, one of my hobbies is 3D graphics and 3D animation. So you know, this image that you see behind me is a 3D image that was created on some software that I have. So I've been doing that for about 10 plus years now, and now I have a little more time to work on it. So that's, you know, nice, you know, with COVID. Sure. Okay, I have something to do when I'm at home and I can't go anywhere. Normally, you know, my wife and I love to travel, and we would be traveling a lot. I joined a travel club, which I haven't actually been able to take advantage of, but I'm hoping to in the future, where we can, you know, travel with some other people that we know and do these, you know, interesting and fun, you know, events. Right before COVID hit, we were actually in Asia. Actually, as COVID was hitting Asia, we were there.
Wow.
And, you know, people were starting to mask up, and they were starting to put this travel restriction. We weren't sure we were going to get back. But we were in the north part of Thailand and at this elephant camp and had this amazing experience, you know, living in these tents. They were actually in the, you know, and these were luxury tents. I mean, there's
sure.
what they call glamping.
There you go.
But, you know, these tree houses, we were up in these trees, and these tents and these platforms were built in these trees, and that's what we stayed in. And there was only 40 something of them in this location, and that was it. They had 40, you know, guests. And then we were interacting with the elephants. And wow, what an experience. Just,
very cool.
You know, a wonderful, wonderful experience. So that type of, you know, travel. I don't know that we'll ever do a cruise again. We did one, and that was not what we liked. But, you know, I guess they call it experience travel.
Okay.
Yep. Where you're going somewhere to really gain an experience. So we love that. We love the cities. You know, love going to New York and London and you know, places like that. We love food and, you know, going out to dinner and that. So hopefully that will all return, you know, the travel and, you know, being able to go out will return again. But getting in shape, you know, so I have a little more time to do that. So those are the kinds of things that we're doing.
Great. So what parting advice would you give to, is we have a lot of kind of new and up and coming leaders that listen to the podcast. What parting advice would you give them?
One thing that people get very fixated on a job, you know, and they're like, okay, well, here's my next job, you know, and they're asking their leaders, and they should be. That's not something they shouldn't focus on. But a lot of the learnings that I got and what I tried to give, you know, people that were developing in their careers were around projects. You know, things to go do. You're in a job and, okay, I can take on something else. And that's much easier for a manager to provide if they're good. You know, okay, I don't need to move you out of your current job to give you some new experiences. You know, I don't have to promote you. I don't have to move you into different else. I can give you something else to do and a project. And I found that doing that really enabled people to take on new things, expand what they were doing in a relatively lower risk way. They didn't have to leave something. They could just take on something in addition to what they were doing or within their area. But, you know, okay, you're now responsible for this. You know, I'm going to give it to you, and, you know, versus somebody else. And you have to bring it, you know, in. So giving people responsibility and opportunities to learn around projects, pushing down decision-making deep within the organization is something that I always believed in. And it helped us develop a very deep leadership bench because people were familiar with making decisions early on, even as lower managers. They were held, you know, they're making the decision and then they're held accountable for it. I also pushed budget responsibility deep within the organization. People manage their own budget. So as they came up, they were familiar and used to doing budgeting, which became, if the higher up you go, the more you're able to manage a budget is critical and a critical skill. So having that be developed early in the career is important. So, if you're, you know, coming up, asking for, hey, can I, you know, manage my budget, or can I take on this project and I'll manage the project budget? Those are things that will increase learning, increase visibility of the person. You know, maybe you don't want to take on the mission critical one as the first one out, you know, that everybody's got their eyes on, but certainly, and as a manager trying to develop your people, giving them opportunities to fail, mm-hmm. you know, to take on things. And if they fail, great. You know, you learn something, you know, just what's a, you know, fast fail, is a really good model. It not just for the ability to bring in new technology, but it's a great way to develop people. You fast fail helps them understand that it's safe to take risks, to bring in new something. It didn't work out. Okay, let's go solve the problem a different way. And it fosters that innovation and that creativity. And it creates an organization then that is comfortable with change. And if you're in IT, you better be comfortable with change, because it's going to happen whether you want it to or not. So the more comfortable you are as an individual and as an organization with change, you know, the more successful you're going to be. So all of those things contribute to, I believe, that both individually and as an organization.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.